Welcome to Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie, joined by Darren, and we bring you the news, reviews and recommendations of the latest theatre.
We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and the next hot ticks.
Evening, Darren.
Evening, Natalie. How are you doing this evening?
Well, my love, I am on the Lemsip, and you can hear that my voice is a little bit on the deep side today. I think I'm coming down with that cold.
Oh, babes.
I know. I have done so well. I have fought it off, but I think I've, you know, my immune system is pretty damn good working in a school, but too many people are coughing and spluttering everywhere. And I think I've succumbed to it. I've worked really hard with all my students, getting them ready for their performance exams, and I think it's taken its toll. So no Earl Grey for me this evening, just a nice hot Lemsip.
Well, I'm on the peppermint tea this evening.
Well, that's lovely.
It is.
Enjoy your peppermint tea. And what have you been seeing then? I can't even laugh. Listen to it. It's like, oh, all these notes missing.
Oh, bless. All your squeaky laughter.
I know.
I do like a good peppermint tea in the evening. I can't do anything caffeinated because it's a bit late and it's roughly, what, 8 o'clock now. So, yeah. But no, this week's been an eventful week in some respects. To kick off, I want to mention Riverside Studios have their Bite Size Festival. Now, what Bite Size is basically about, it's snippets of festival-style fringe shows. So if you think about, say, Ed Fringe or The Vaults or something, it's a whole series of different acts, mainly monologues and stuff, and also falling plays. And they say bite-sized because they're around an hour long. And I do believe there's 25 different productions going on this month. So it ran from the end of January, and it's going right through until almost the end of February. And guess what? For £50, a £50 ticket gets you a festival pass to see all the shows. How amazing is that?
That's really good value for money. How many shows did you say there are?
25 different productions, I believe.
Wow. And is there a possibility of being able to see all of them, or is that like an impossibility?
I wouldn't say impossibility because they've got matinee shows and evening stuff. For instance, I went on what they called kind of one of the opening nights on Thursday, and I saw three shows. So I saw one in the afternoon. The afternoon show I saw was called Dickless, which was a monologue piece. And then in the early evening...
Sorry. Dickless.
Dickless, yes. But which is a bit of an odd name, I think, because I don't remember them really talking about anything to do with Dick, unless I kind of missed that part.
Was there a lack of Richard? Is that a lack of Richard?
Something like that, yeah.
But that, I don't get... It's really peculiar. Okay, cool.
It was a good piece. It was a good piece. It was a good piece. I'm a bit of hit and miss of monologues. Sometimes they can be really great. Sometimes they can be not so good. And I have seen terrific ones, especially at the Ed Fringe, where you expect to see kind of a lot of these more, I don't know, standalone shows. Obviously, a monologue is cheaper to run because it's obviously one cast member, normally an SM. So the setup and stuff is really very inexpensive. So that's why there tends to be quite a lot of them in the Fringe circuit. But I did enjoy it. The next one was Dazzling. Again, another monologue talking about lots of different things. It was okay. It wasn't the best one I've seen, but it was okay. And then Bury Me, which was ultimately about a funeral that went a bit wrong, mainly because the body disappeared, as in the funeral parlour delivered it to the wrong chapel. And it's kind of a dark comedy, I guess. There were some funny moments, but I don't know. But that was the first day that I saw some stuff. I'll probably go and see some more as the month continues. But like I said, there's about 24, 25 different productions. It's definitely worthwhile seeing if you just want to see some theatre, some short theatre as well. But some of these performances or productions are only on for a couple of performances. So they might have only two or three performances. They might have five or six. So you just have to go on the website, the Riverside Studio website, and take a look, and then just select the ones that you want to see. And yeah, take a look, take a gamble. I mean, it's in the Studio 3, which is the 150-seat studio. So it's not the big space, but it works perfectly. In some respects, it's probably a bit too big. still. If some of the, like, the ones I saw, it would be nice if it's a bit more intimate.
I think that's where I saw that Othello production last year. Is this the first time that they've done that festival then, or is this a festival they've been doing for years?
No, it's the fourth or fifth year. You know, it's a good way of trying stuff out, I think. If you're a new writer and you want to, you know, try some bits out, I think Bite Size Festival is probably the festival for you. They do an awards as well at the end of the festival. So, you know, it's a real nice kind of, like, as if you're going to the Ed Fringe, or like I said, at Bolts, when it was at Bolts in Waterloo. So, yeah, it's, if you want to see some fringe work and you're in West London, great. Pop along. Absolutely recommend. But, yeah, just have a look on the website and see which kind of plays, you know, tickle your fancy, as it were. A friend of mine, Alice, who's a wonderful actress. But what do you think about Andram? Because as far as Alice is concerned, she's a professional actress, but she just wants to work. So when she's not working on professional stuff, she just does stuff just so she keeps in the loop of things. What do you think about that?
I've got mixed views. I totally get what Alice is doing, because you just need to keep working and you need to be constantly fueling. You know, it's your instrument, isn't it? You need to use your voice. You need to be rehearsing. You need to be, you know, experiencing theatre, watching theatre, going to class, you know, keeping it all going. I guess as a professional actor, you sign yourself up for something that's Amdram that you're not being paid for, and then your agent comes through with a job. You're in a tricky situation, maybe, because you can't then audition for something else. It might clash, etc. Personally, over the last, you know, 23 years where I've not been acting, I have often thought about the idea of doing some Amdram theatre and then bottled it and decided not to, purely because, I don't know, I just felt that I was professional and that's what I did, and it just didn't feel like it was what I wanted to do. And maybe that's because then I felt that it was a different type of person or actor. But then that was in sort of prevent, you know, I was out in Essex, it was like a small town and that kind of thing. But I guess if you're in London and there's Amdram going on, you're going to get maybe more of a mix of professionals and non-professionals. And generally, all the people that take part in Amdram are totally, you know, engaged in it, enthusiastic and, you know, almost professional in their approach to it, i.e. turning up on time, learning their stuff. So, you know, I don't know. What do you think about Amdram?
A bit big, similar to what you said, really. You know, I got a friend years ago, actually, who was a very good actress, and she wasn't getting the roles that she wanted. And so she joined, I can't remember where it was now, but it's Central London, actually. It's quite a well-known Amdram society. And she was then actually working on the theatre jobs that she wanted to be in. So as far as she was concerned, she wanted to be an actress doing the roles that she wants, regardless of being paid or where it was on and stuff. She just enjoyed being those characters. So for that, I think it's absolutely fine. I've never really considered myself, mainly because I don't like performing in theatre. I'm much more suited to screen. So for me, going on Amdram, it's not really, I don't know, that's something I've really considered, because I don't actually like performing on stage. So for me, it's kind of irrelevant. But, you know, it was a wonderful play, a John Godbold play, called Going Dutch. Do you know Going Dutch? Have you heard of that play?
No, I know a lot of John Godbold's work, but not Going Dutch, no.
Two couples that go on a trip to a Bruce Springsteen concert in Amsterdam. But they go on the ferry, so there's all things going on the ferry and then the drive there and stuff like that. And it's all about their relationships and the the conflicts and stuff that happens. So it's quite a fun play. I wasn't familiar with it either, so I was pleased I got to see it. And it was at the wonderful Gatehouse Theatre, which I really like. It's a wonderful space. Do you know the Gatehouse Theatre in Highgate?
I actually performed there about 25 years ago. I did a production called A Chorus of Disapproval. I loved it. Love that theatre. And it's just a really gorgeous area. In fact, it was that production that I did that the agent who had come to my agent showcase the day before then came to watch me in that, and then I got my agent. Yeah. So it's quite a I really like that theatre. But do you know what the funny thing is? I don't think I've ever been back. So I should go and see something there.
Yeah, you really should. It's a wonderful place. In fact, your poster of that show may still be on the wall, because on the stairwell going up and in the hallway and stuff, they have, I don't know about hundreds, but over 100 or so posters of shows that they've produced there. So you never know, your show might still be on that wall.
Oh, wow. That's exciting, because I think we had some of our, I can't even remember. I think some of us were on that poster. That'd be really cool.
So what did you see this week?
I saw, and this is one that you need to see, I'm just going to preface it with that, A Mirror. This play is a lie. So it's called A Mirror, but then all over the advertising it says This Play is a Lie. This is Sam Holcroft's play. It's directed by Jeremy Herrin. And there are so many things that I want to say about the production, about the pre-show, about the way it's staged, about everything, but I can't. Because I think the most that I can say with my sore throat is that there are lots of twists and turns. And that's all I can say, because otherwise it would spoil it. It really would. It's not a play that I was familiar with or have read. It's new. It was at the Almeida in 2023, so literally end of last year. And then it's transferred to West End. It is at the Trafalgar Theatre. The Trafalgar Theatre, I think the last thing that I saw at the Trafalgar Theatre was Jersey Boys. And since then, it's had a huge restoration. It's been newly decorated, and they've taken it all back to its original 1930s heritage design. And it really suited this piece as well. Just something about the surroundings and then the piece that was kind of encapsulated within it. So it was nice to see what they've done with the auditorium, because you and I obviously both know it in its former glory with the small studio space that has now gone, which we're both upset about. And you've had work there, I think, in the past, haven't you?
Yeah, when it was called Trafalgar Studios. Yeah, I've done seven shows there. Yeah.
So... and it's sad because that space is a great space right in, just off Charing Cross. And there were always loads of, I saw your, is it Coming Clean?
Yes.
Yeah. I loved that space. But yeah, in that space, I've also seen so many one woman shows, like solo artists, just really interesting pieces. So yeah, sad about that. And it was also the first theatre for me. It gives you your wine in a plastic wine glass rather than a tumbler, which I always loved, particularly on your press nights. But anyway, that aside, this particular production, it was so incredibly clever, Darren. As I said, the twists and turns. It was a tour de force in acting. It was a showcase. It was... sublime. It was so clever. There's so many things I want to say, but I just can't. But the person who stole the show for me, and it was a small cast, the person who stole the show for me was Tanya Reynolds. So she is in Sex Education. Do you watch Sex Education?
I have, yes. Yeah, season 4 was a bit strange, but I did love it.
Yeah, season 4 was odd. I haven't quite got to the end of that. But she was the... the lesbian that was all obsessed with space and drawing and doodling on her notebook, and she had like the bonkers things on her head and stuff. But yeah, her acting was incredible. She was so watchable. Her active listening and her sort of subtext and nonverbal communication, she just drew focus the whole time in a great way. She was sharing the stage for most of the production with Johnny Lee Miller, who was also very, very strong, but I was watching her. My focus was completely on her. Every little nuance, gesture, physicality she did, I was watching. She's a very, very strong performer. So anything she's in the future, I will be there with bells on. But yeah, there was like a pre-show thing. I don't want to say too much about that because that will spoil it. But yeah, the play basically is about censorship, and it questions the nature, so you'll love this, of what makes good theatre and what theatre is and what theatre should be. And there's a question of, you know, when we replicate real life conversation, i.e. verbatim, and put it on the stage, is that art? Is it theatre? What is it? Or is it just, you know, a lie? Is the play a lie? And there's a play within a play and a rehearsal. It's very clever. It reminded me in many ways of, there was a play by Yasmina Riza called Art, which I've directed before, where three people fall out because one of them, they're best friends, one of them has bought a massive piece of art, a massive canvas that is basically just white. And they all fall out about questioning what makes art. And one is like poncing around and saying, oh, you know, there's different light and shade in this. And I can see, you know, and the other one's like, what's absolute rubbish? Why have you spent this amount of money on this? What is art? So this is kind of like the flips it, but it's more about censorship, but it's thinking about what makes good theatre and what is good theatre writing. Really clever. A use of a cellist on stage, and she's kind of in the action as well. But yeah, so small cast. Adam is played by Samuel Adewumni. Bax is played by Jeffrey Stratfield. May is played by Tanya Reynolds. And Chelik is played by Johnny Lee Miller. I think the last thing I saw him in theatre-wise was Frankenstein at the National Theatre. You know, when he played it and Benedict Cumberbatch played it as well. And then it was in the National Theatre online. It's in the archives anyway. People can watch that. And the cellist was Marianne Wakeling. And yeah, it looks like the whole same cast from the 2023 production have all just moved straight into it, apart from Michael Ward. But yeah, really clever. I would go and see this again. Definitely. Obviously, those twists and turns wouldn't be there for me, but I bought the play script as well, so I wanted to just read it again. You need to go and see it, Darren. You'd love this. It's a goodie. I would call it a 5-star. I would definitely call it a 5-star. I've read some of the reviews, Darren, though, and I think I sent you one the other day. The stage said 3-star. I mean, what planet? I just don't get it. 4-star, at least, maybe, you know, I've been too effusive, but I just don't get it. It was 2 hours straight through, no interval. That's interesting.
Well, maybe that's why they gave it a 3-star. They needed to pee and they couldn't.
Maybe. They didn't get a drink. I don't know. But yeah, I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. It was thrilling. That's going to be my word on this one. It was thrilling.
I really want to see it. I actually was meant to go with you, but we had a double booking, didn't we? So
yes,
we couldn't both be at the same show at the same time. This is what happens to us sometimes, which is good that we're a double act, because we can split off and see things separately. But it's nice when you get a good referral from our co-hosts.
Absolutely,
to definitely go and see it. Absolutely. No, I'm looking forward to seeing that one. I missed it at the Almeida. By the time I got around to sorting out dates, the tickets had all gone. So yeah, definitely when it's now it's at Trafalgar. But it's only a limited run, isn't it? It's not on for very long. It's only on to the 20th of April. So
it is a limited run. Yeah. And it is selling out. And the ticket prices are really high now. And what was quite interesting as well, when you look across the auditorium and the foyer before going in, the demographic for this piece of theatre was quite different. I don't know, what have I seen recently? I guess there's been quite an older demographic at the things that I've seen recently. But it was definitely a cooler, younger, arty vibe. It was very much a young London artsy crowd. Really, really. Just there was a real energy. It was in the audience as well. Yeah. I loved it. I had a great evening. Great evening. And thank you to the school trip who gave me my tickets and programme and drink voucher. So thank you. Because I loved it. I would love to speak to some of the cast on this one. See what I can do.
Contact the press office if Johnny or Tanya's up for a conversation. That'd be really cool. Well, moving on from a show that you love to a show I loved, it was a pure delight, and that's Bronco Billy the Musical. And that's playing at Charing Cross Theatre, recently opened, so it's on for a little while. But it does, again, they're all limited seasons here. So Bronco Billy does actually finish on the 7th of April, but you have got some time. But I would really, really recommend this, Natalie. It's just a fun, wonderful show. I mean, you know, the blurb of the website says it's 1979 and life is tough for a group of romantic, fast, drawing, trick-riding, disco-dancing, Wild West roustabouts and their travelling show. So basically, they're a bunch of Midwestern people, almost like cabaret acts in some respects, and they basically travel around America with their technically their van, their truck, which they sleep on and everything else. And they just, it's almost like a sideshow from the Victorian times, but obviously it's up into the late 70s. But Bronco Billy is the fastest gunslinger in the West, and he's shooting plates and beer cans and that kind of stuff. And their show is not doing too well. Basically, they've run out of money, so they can't even afford plates anymore. So it's got that bad. And then this wonderful character, Antoinette Lilly, who is on the run from basically her stepmother's solicitor and husband, are trying to kill her so they can take the inheritance that she's got from her father. Now, the cast are brilliant. It's got Victoria Hamilton Barrett, who I adore. I absolutely love her. You may remember her from such shows as Hex and Cinderella. She's in Murder Ballad some years ago now with a friend of mine, Norman Bowman. And she won the Olivier for that. And she also won the Olivier for being the stepmother in Cinderella as well. And I actually did enjoy Cinderella. But anyway, that's another podcast. Now, Victoria plays almost a very similar character to the stepmother from Cinderella, where she plays the stepmother, this time, of Antoinette Lilly, played wonderfully by Emily Benjamin. Now, Emily Benjamin, going back into some of her career, she is the alternate Sally Boyles in the original cast of Cabaret, playing with Jessie Buckley. And you kind of, in her headshot, you can kind of see why. She looks very Jessie Buckley-ish there. But going back to Victoria, she steals the show for me, absolutely. The comedy genius that she is really brings such a great kind of like wickedness, yet in a very dark comedic way, to this stepmother character. The whole thing, the songs are great, the staging's wonderful, all the performances are wonderful. Taryn Callender plays Bronco Billy. I've already mentioned Emily. Then you've got some almost like ensemble cast, but it's very much a collective piece. Gemma Atkins, who plays Dee Dee Delaware. Jonathan Bourne is Sam Lilly, is really funny. Josh Butler, he's the young guy. He's like kind of like quite new to everything, and he's very innocent, the innocent young chap in the troupe, as it were. Then you've got Chris Jarrett is playing Edgar White Lipton. Alice Croft is Mitzi Fritz. Again, another wonderful character. You got some really comedic roles, actually, by both Henry Maynard and Alexander McMorran, who plays Sinclair St. Clair. And everyone, because he sounds like Sinclair St. Clair, there's a comedy moment by every single person who questions his name. And he goes, "No, it's Sinclair St. Clair." So he's basically the guy that's trying to murder Antoinette. There's some wonderful moments as well with the props, where the props don't quite go to plan. So, for instance, the plates that get spun and fired out, they kind of get a bit AWOL. And there's a wonderful choreography with knives, where they're throwing knives at each other. And it's the whole thing was, are they throwing the knife? Or did they actually just grab the knife? All this kind of stuff. But it works really, really well. The book is by Dennis Hackin. Musical lyrics by Chip Rosenblum, and it was directed by Hunter Bird. Can I also do a big shout out to the designer of the program? A program that was really nice and glossy. I'm actually touching it right now. I don't know if you can hear that on the podcast there. But they got this cowboy trivia quiz in the center, which is really fun. And it's something like 20 odd questions over the multiple choice answers. And just seeing how many of these you get right. Like, what was Jesse James's brother's name? Henry? Billy? Oh, no idea. And then, what was Billy the Kid's original name? I don't know. See, I thought I had some quite good history on cowboys, but obviously I need to watch a few more westerns. But that's the thing, the promotion of it, it looks like very much a western kind of musical, and it isn't. It's obviously set in with western stuff, but it's, like I said, it's a traveling kind of sideshow kind of troupe of performers that kind of hitch up in certain cities, and they sell tickets for their shows, and then they kind of close shop and they move on again to the next place. So it's almost like the cowboy element is part of the performance as opposed to being an actual cowboy. So yeah, but like I said, I really did love it. I really enjoyed it. Great cast, great ensemble cast there. Great creatives. Wonderful production. I really hope he does well. Triangle Cross, very hit and miss with regards to the success of the shows there. But like I said, this is one of the best shows I've seen at Triangle Cross Theatre in some time. So, and with the cast they've got, I'm sure it's going to do very well. And the songs are really upbeat, and they're fun, and it tells a wonderful story, and there's hope and all these lovely elements going through. So yeah, highly recommended.
Okay, cool. It sounded amazing. So the last time I saw Victoria, I believe, was in that community project press night that we went to at the National Theatre, The Odyssey. And she was brilliant in that.
Yes, she really was, yeah.
I think that was the last time that I saw her perform, yeah. And I love Taron Callender.
Oh, you know him?
I love his performances. I've seen him in so many things.
But he's in the original cast of the UK version of Hamilton. So you've seen him in that.
Indeed.
I actually saw him in Panto.
Probably. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. At the Hackney Empire. Yeah. It's very good. Yeah.
But yeah, it sounds like a great cast. And yeah, I'm definitely going to try and see that, because obviously I was meant to be at the press night with you, but I ended up at Amira. We had two great shows on the same night. So I'm definitely going to try and get along to that. When's that one running to? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yes, I can tell you right now. It's on to the 7th of April.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Okay. I can watch that one in half term or whenever. I've got time. Fabulous. And
you've got time. Yes.
Yeah. So great. And then you were off interviewing, Darren. Where did you go? Who did you speak to?
I went to a rehearsal of Out of Season, which is going to be on at the Hampstead Theatre from the 16th of February, running through to the 23rd of March on the downstairs. So it's Hampstead downstairs. And it's written by Neil D'Souza, who's actually in it. He's playing one of the characters. And it's directed by Alice Hamilton. And Alice Hamilton is now one of the associate directors of Hampstead Theatre. So she's done quite a few bits and pieces there. And I first got to see her work in Austin's Shadow, I believe it's called, at Southern Playhouse in, I think it's 2015, 2016. So she's, you know, she's doing really some really, really terrific work. So I'm thrilled to be able to see this show when it opens on the 16th February. So I went to the rehearsal, as I said, and I got to talk with Neil D'Souza, who's the writer, and he's also playing a character called Dev in the show, and also another cast member who's playing Michael, called James Hillier. And James Hillier, again, quite a prolific acting career, from EastEnders, Hull City, through to a lot of stage work. And he owns his own theatre company as well, called The Fibulator. So he's quite very active in the theatre scene. I'm looking forward to this. I think you'll enjoy this play. It's basically set in Ibiza, and it's about some friends that are kind of our age, and they go off to Ibiza, and they haven't been there since their 20s. And it's how not so much how the island's changed, but how they've changed. And they're still kind of like those young, they're middle-aged, but they're young at heart, and they just want to rekindle that youth that they had. So yeah, so this is what they had to say.
So I'm in the rehearsal room of Out of Season with cast members James Hillier and Neil D'Souza. So this play opens at the Hampstead Theatre downstairs on the 16th February.
That's correct.
So Neil, you wrote the play. So essentially, what is it about?
It is about three men who go on holiday to Ibiza, kind of a reunion. They were there like 30 years before. And it's also about middle-aged men still being young, middle-aged people still being young, reliving their youth. Music, drugs, all of it. And they meet these two great women there as well, great characters. So, yeah. in a nutshell.
Okay. What could possibly go wrong?
I know, right? I mean, a group of middle-aged men going to Ibiza. Wow. You
know?
Yeah. This is certainly something I like to say. I haven't been to Ibiza actually since I was in my early 20s. So maybe it's a chance to kind of rekindle that youth.
Indeed. And neither had they, in fact, in the play. It said this is the first time, first time two of them have been back since their 20s. So there's a whole journey of kind of rediscovery and a journey of going back to a youthful time, given that they are now middle-aged.
So how did the idea come about?
Well, it was interesting. Hampstead basically asked me to write the play about guys who had not had children, who were older, and their attitudes to that. There was nothing about Ibiza. There was nothing about clubbing culture or anything like that. And I happened to be on holiday in Ibiza with a friend of mine and we were chatting about it in general. And then suddenly this idea came up that these guys were on holiday and, they're in their 50s. They just reached 50 and, you know, they're old, but they're young. And that seemed to me fertile territory for drama and comedy.
And how did you get involved, James?
I got cast in it. I came in, had an audition with Alice Hamilton, who's the director, and Neil. And clearly, you know, wasn't too bad.
But what drew you to the project then? What about this specifically that you thought, I want to be part of this?
It's a great play. It really is. It's a really good story. It's really well written. The character I'm playing is a lot of fun. As soon as I read it, I just thought, I'd love to do that. It doesn't feel like work ever in the room here. It just feels like a lot of fun.
Very playful. Yeah.
You're playing Michael, yeah?
Correct.
So tell us about this character.
Michael is, he's a middle-aged guy who's had a certain amount of success in his life, if you like. Maybe kind of monetary success and in terms of his career, possibly he's had a family, but also he is at a turning point. I think things are kind of changing a bit for him and it's all not kind of completely straightforward. He's someone that projects a lot of confidence. He's someone that projects a sense of ownership. And and walks breezily into any room, but it's not all straightforward, is it?
No, it never seems to be, does it? So, Neil, you obviously wrote the play.
Yeah.
Did you write the character of Dev with you in mind? I mean, was it always the case, or are you?
Not always the case. We did audition people for it, actually. I was unsure about whether I was going to do it, and I was always a little, you know, I'd been in a play of mine before. So I know what it involves. And so I was like, should I do it or should I not? I think it just came to the point that we couldn't find another actor. We wanted to do it. And Alice said, I think you could do it. So it's kind of how I've ended up doing it. I consulted a lot of friends about it because it's quite a big decision to be in something that you've written. And many of them, the majority of them said, you've got to do it. And
I was like, oh, God, yeah.
You know, including James, in fact, who is an old friend of mine. So he said, you've got to do it. So it was a decision to make because there are consequences for doing your own work. It's not quite the same as, you know, turning up on the first day of rehearsal and just being the actor.
I'm feeling that a bit, Darren, because we've met before in my capacity as I direct a bit as well. And I tell you what, it's just really lovely not having to be in charge in the room.
But then, Neil, how do you separate it? So this is a new play that you've written. So obviously you're still tweaking stuff.
I am.
Obviously that's what rehearsal is all about, getting that play to where it can be. Or obviously in previews it still gets tweaked again. So how are you able to do that, be the actor in the room and the writer?
With difficult. No, I've done it once before. I did it. I wrote a play for Watford Palace Theatre, which I was in. Which I didn't direct. So I have form and I know how it is. And I know it's not the easiest of things to do, but it is, and it's quite revealing and it's quite, but it is ultimately rewarding. Actually, taken all in all, it's rewarding, although it is a lot of pressure, do you know what I mean? And a lot of, you know, so how do I do it? I think it's an interesting one because that shifts, you know, the first week of rehearsal, you're doing a lot of rewrites. So that is the nightmare week where you're kind of working, you're absorbing so much information in the day and then rewriting in the evening while trying to act during the day, et cetera. And you're working with the director and all that. I think it's getting easier. As you get into rehearsal, you think, look, I've got a job to do. I'm an actor. I've got to play this part. And so you actually, it gets easier because your job gets simpler, hopefully. Do you know what I mean? The last time I did and this time I did. But I'm not going to lie and say that it's the easiest thing in the world to do because it is a strange role to be an actor and a writer. It's a double responsibility. So, but I, as I said, I did it before and it was ultimately rewarding, although difficult at times.
And how is it working with Alice? I mean, Alice came on my radar quite a while ago in 2015, 2016 with the Orson Welles play. She did a Southern Playhouse, which I really, really liked. And she's obviously gone on. She does a lot with Hampstead Theatre, one of the associate directors there now. So what's that relationship like?
Well, I mean, Alice, the great thing was that this was a first draft this time last year. And they basically said, we're going to produce it. I've never, ever had a first draft produced. So I was on a kind of train track production from January last year. I was in Canada being an actor in another show. So it was crazy. But Alice was somebody I met right when I came back in January to the meeting. And I met Alice and she's been with it since. And I think we have a good, very good relationship. She's a great director. She's done a lot of work. And also one of the things, you know, we talked about and I talked to Greg about was I needed somebody who could work with me on the script because I was doing a lot. I was doing other acting jobs. I did two or three other acting jobs and I needed to work with somebody on the script in between. So I needed a dramaturg who could also be my director. And so, you know, Alice was the perfect person that came to me and me and her have been on the phone weekly for about a year. You know, it's often daily, often twice daily. Do you know what I mean? Dealing with the play and there's been all sorts of things. I've been in Canada again and, you know, she's done directed shows, but we've always kept up, you know, and talked about the script and I've given her drafts and whatnot.
Okay. Yeah. James, tell us about Defibrillator.
Defibrillator.
Defib Theatre.
Yeah. That's a company that I've been putting things on now for probably about 13, 14 years. And it started as a result of wanting to put on my own work. And initially, the first thing we did was a play by Rebecca Gilman called Blue Surge. And I was in that. And then just one thing after the other, an opportunity came up to direct something. And that was the Tennessee Williams Hotel plays, which I sort of, through one thing and another, and Tennessee Williams' executor at the time, who was a lovely guy called Tom Earhart at Casarotta, he's passed away now, but he sent me a Tennessee Williams play called Green Eyes, and I read it, and I absolutely adored it, but it was very short, and I couldn't see a way that you could put it on, or any way you could put it on, and then I read a few more of his plays, and he set a lot of plays in hotels, so came up with the idea that you put them all together and then you create a character that went into all the rooms and approached a hotel about it. They loved the idea. It happened. The next thing you know, you're putting on a play. It's sort of, as is often the way in this life, it kind of happened by accident. And it did. It was fantastic. It was a real journey. It was very exciting. We're all finding out how to make stuff happen as it went along. And that just sort of, I guess, they just snowballed from there, really. Opportunities came along. We have a play opening. Can I do a plug?
Yeah.
We've got play opening next week. Week after it was coming back, which is Jeffrey Bernard is Unwell, which is doing at the Coach and Horses, which is it's a cracking night out, ladies and gentlemen. It really is. Robert Bathurst plays Jeffrey Bernard and I've adapted that and directed it. And it is a proper fun night because you go to the Coach and Horses pub in Soho. You buy a pint and you watch this bloke hang on about his life for an hour and all the mishaps he's had and all the tales. Yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah, sounds like a good night out. Let's interview more about that another time.
Yeah.
What is it like being an actor-director, like with a production company and then acting on someone else's project when you've got that whole director's aspect as well? I mean, are you okay with just letting it go and like not challenging Alice, or yeah, you okay with that?
I'm a nightmare. Alice is constantly having to kick me out of the room for telling her, you're getting it wrong, Alice. Mm. It's very weird. I can just change hats. I will sit there as a director and I will look at the actors on the first run through and I'll sit there as a director and go, oh, what a nightmare. Those poor bastards up there have got to go through this now. I'm just sitting here. I don't have any work to do. I'm just going to watch them now, make notes, whatever. On the flip side, when I'm up there acting, I'm looking at the director going, oh, no. Look at them down there. They're, you know, it doesn't look like any fun. This is where you want to be.
Yeah.
So I think there must be something slightly schizophrenic in there that enables me to do it. But I really enjoy both sides. And I think they feed into each other a lot. And my directing is informed very much by my experience as an actor. And I think probably I'm a much nicer actor to directors as a result of having been a director.
So you've had quite a successful TV career, you know, with the Holby EastEnders, part of the Mitchell clan for a little while.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, how was that?
Well, it was exciting times. I got my own doofs, which was a big moment for me and my family. Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing those shows. It's a show like that is very full on, and I wasn't in for a long, long time. But some of those guys, I was there for the first day. I think Samantha Janice was on it, and she was literally having to learn the Bible every day. She would go home, learn 30 pages or something, and come in and deliver it all during the day. But one of the things I found, particularly on a show like EastEnders, is a bit like doing theatre. I remember the first scene I had in the Vic, and I was in the stairwell, and it's a sort of multi-cam setup, and I'm walking into a scene that's already happening. And when you arrive there, it's all live. Everyone's live, and it's all happening in the moment. And so it's very exciting. It's very thrilling. Sure, if you're on it for a longer time, you kind of get used to that. But it did feel... felt like doing theatre. Yeah.
What about you, Neil? I mean, what about you?
I have done EastEnders, actually.
Oh, you've done EastEnders as well?
Yeah, I played Max Branning's lawyer, who was rubbish and got sacked after like three episodes. what I found was amazing about EastEnders was I actually had about 10 scenes and they did it in 2 days because it's multi-camera. But they're incredibly professional. The guy who's playing Max Branning was like quite quiet, and then at the end he was really friendly. But they just do it day in, day out. I mean, I have huge respect for the work they do and how quickly they learn scripts. You know, they don't get any rehearsal period like we do, you know. But I've done a lot of, I have done a lot of telly over the years. I was in a show called In the Long Run with Idris Elba. I played his boss and Bill Bailey. And that was fantastic. We did 3 series of that.
What's it like working with Idris?
He was great. He was the reason that I got promoted. I was originally went in for 3 days on the first series. And at the end, when we were having our makeup taken off, he said, I like what you've done today and I'm going to make sure they write more for you. And I thought, oh, that's never going to happen. And he went straight to the producers and he said, yeah. And I was in the next series and I was in the series after that and became his boss, kind of became a semi-reg with him and, you know, him and Bill Bailey. And that was all him. I think he's an incredible guy who's got so many different parts of his career running at the same time. Hollywood, sitcom, you know, social activism, it's all going. But I mean, I can say nothing but nice things because of how he kept to his word on that first day. He recognized something and he said, I'm going to do this for you. And he did it. You know, he didn't have to, do you know what I mean? So, yeah. And I thought it was great. And you know, the other thing about Idris is that you'd shoot a scene with him, and he's got so much going on that it doesn't look like he knows his lines. He's just learning them before he starts, and you obviously know your lines. And then he does it, and by the end you get something, and then you watch it, and he's just so full of charisma. The camera just picks up the charisma from him. Do you know what I mean? So he's kind of effortless, do you know what I mean? And, yeah, I think he's a very interesting guy, very, you know, he's got so much going on, but, yeah.
So he doesn't learn his lines?
He does learn his lines. I think I'm not saying he doesn't learn his lines, but I think he you know, when he was doing In the Long Run, I think he was doing about three or four other projects, including Hollywood movies, you know, like including that one with the cars, Fast and Furious, you know. So he's doing that all at the same time. So he would come on, he'd have a knowledge of his lines, but he'd learn them during the rehearsal, the camera rehearsals, and he'd be fine by the end of it. He never let you down. But when you go, oh, well, is it going to pick up? But he has just picked these up. And when you see the final thing, it's just he is full of charisma. Mm. The camera loves him. Mm. Well, something he's doing is just, you know, it's a bit like Sean Connery. You know, I think those people are not even really trying to act. I don't quite know what that is, but, you know, obviously it's done him, you know, quite, you know, done him good things. You know, he's done well. But yeah, he was great. So yeah. So yeah, I've done that, and I've done lots of other TV shows.
Humans
as well. I was in series 3 of Humans, which I loved as well. And that was, you know, that was great. It, you know, there was a cast of like so many people in that. It was such a wide-ranging series, and these kind of human robots, whatever, you know, were in it too. And that was a sci-fi thing. I really enjoyed that. And I haven't done a lot of telly in the last few years, so I've been doing a lot of theatre, but I will probably go back to it at some point.
Okay. How did you get into acting, both of you? James, go ahead.
Well, we went to RADA.
Yes. At the same time. Oh, yes. So RADA alumni. Yeah. Not at the same time, though, was it? Or?
Yeah. Oh, I was a third year, but he was the first year.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, so Neil was a hero. One of the untouchables.
Your mentors.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And how it's gone down.
But it's exciting that to be working with someone that you've known for that long, because there's something very recognisable there, but also, you know, we've all changed. But yeah, in terms of like how personally I am here where I am now, I think probably it's just something I've always loved doing. And then I tried out for RADA and got in. And from there, the opportunities came. I don't know how I would have done it if I hadn't gone to RADA. I was at King's College studying English. I was telling Neil about it the other day. I was doing a lot of stuff with the theatre companies there. And we were touring around and going up to Edinburgh and what have you. And one of the guys who I was... that was in the theatre company with me, who's a fantastic actor, you probably know, Jamie Ballard, he said, "Oh, you should try out for RADA. You're good. And I was like, "You're kidding, I could never do that." And he's like, "Yeah, go on, mate, go on, give it a go." So I did, I did, and here we are now. So it's the music of chance, isn't it, sometimes?
I think there's something about this profession, and I've noticed it over the years that I've done it, that just draws people. Like, even when they try and go away, they get drawn back. Mm. Because I didn't know I wanted to be an actor, but I was at university and I went to Italy, got involved with a theatre company, and just kept on, wherever I went, getting drawn back into acting. And my thing was RADA as well, was once I got into RADA, those 3 years were like, that is a vocational thing. You know, I took it very seriously, and that was a vocational thing. And, you know, you're on a real track then. Mm. You know what I mean? It made it very serious for me. I got to RADA that I wanted to do this. Do you know what I mean? I sometimes think if I hadn't got into RADA, would I carry on acting? I'm not sure.
It makes it a tangible thing. And like you're saying, you really are working constantly. I mean, they work you so hard, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing kind of school to have on your CV. I mean, it opens doors for you without you even having to try anything.
it's an amazing school, and I still have a lot to do with it because I'm on the audition panel at RADA and have been for like 20 years. But and it is, you know, I think of all the schools that I know about, so I think they really wish goodwill on the students. You know, they don't force the students to go in any particular way. I think sometimes I would say that, you know, the like with Oxford and Cambridge, how people view it from the outside isn't necessarily how you feel about it from the inside. I mean, different people have different experiences through drama school and through RADA or whatever. And we just happened to get in there. I was talking about it today. You got your first time. I got it in my first time. Mm. So, you know, to us, we just we did that, and then we were RADA actors. And I think other people maybe see people as RADA actors, whereas I just think now I'm just an actor and just, you know, taking the jobs that I can get and writing plays and being in telly and whatever, you know. But it is a great training. It did. It has left me with a vocation and with some kind of technique. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it, there's always, you've always got something in common with anyone that's been there. And I know it can be a bit, that's the one thing, it can be a bit wearing on people if you're in a company. We don't bang on about it here, but I have seen in certain companies there can be a lot of chumminess from that. But, you know, in a good way, because you've got so much stuff in common. Because, you know, people will be teaching there. There's teachers there who are there now that have been there for 40 years or something. So you have something in common with people, and there's something in common, like, I think, about the approach to... and how you do something which is so ephemeral, you know, how do you do this thing?
Yeah, and I always think there's also a bit of magic in this whole thing, because I was just thinking back to when I met James first, and, you know, RADA, and then we had this conversation. I was thinking my first conversation with James, I remember it, just walking through the lobby of RADA, and we had a conversation about something, and then we met up again, or, you know, a few years later, and then he came to see shows I was in, and I saw things he was in, and we just kept in touch. And then he invited me to his birthday, and I couldn't go because I was doing a show. And then we've ended up in this experience. And I think there is something which draws people magically together. You go, I believe in magic, but I kind of do to some extent. That, you know, you get drawn to things. Like, you get drawn to acting. People get drawn to projects.
No, I completely believe that one, absolutely. Yeah. The writing side, though, when did that start? Was it before the acting? Or
I've written, actually, this is my third play, but the other two, one of them took 5 years to come on, and one of them took seven. I think this one was, after 1 year, he wanted to put it on, so it's by far the fastest. I wrote a series for Westway for the radio. I got commissioned. So I suppose about 5 years after I finished RADA, I just started writing. And for me, a bit like with James and the directing, there was an element of, there is something else I can do, and there's something else I really love doing. It's a very different but related skill, but there's something I really love doing, and I can do it. And so I wrote a radio play, and I wrote a series for the radio, and I got commissioned to write television. I got commissioned to write a stage play. And, you know, I think it just started really from me not wanting to sit around and wait for the phone to ring, actually, in a way. Simple.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what you do a lot when you first leave a drama school, RADA or anywhere else. There's a lot of, like, what am I doing on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? I'm waiting for the phone to ring. If the phone doesn't ring, you do something. And I never, you know, from an early time, like, I'm not going to work in a coffee bar. I have done those jobs, but I thought I'm going to write. And I do enjoy writing, and people paid me to do it. So
the T.S. Eliot Foundation. So how did that start come about? I mean,
I think
you want a scholarship for that, for this play or something? I mean,
they sponsor Downstairs, because Downstairs in Hampstead, I think, I'm not wrong in saying, is kind of privately funded. So, you know, so essentially, you know, Hampstead has a plethora of kind of patrons, and the T.S. Eliot Foundation, and I think someone at Celia Atkin maybe sponsors all the shows Downstairs, because they love theatre, you know, and they've done that for years. And Downstairs is an experimental space, but which is brilliant about an experimental space, it gives you a 6-week run and it gives you a full rehearsal process. I mean, usually with an experimental space, you're looking at a 3-week rehearsal process and a 2-week run maybe, or something like that. But it really does. It is a place where work can be tried out, and work can succeed, or work can, you know, not necessarily fail, but just be what it is. And that's important in theatre, that we don't lose that, you know, that we give playwrights, and not just me, but any other playwright, the ability to try out work in a space which is safe and is going to give you the full facilities. But you can be experimental. You don't have to be, you know, commercial necessarily, you know.
No,
great. Having said that, in our play, we've got a great song So you've got to come, you know, because...
it's a rip-roaring comedy.
There's a rip-roaring comedy, and there is some great songs in it.
You've written some songs for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was part of the experimental nature of my involvement, because I'm not a songwriter, clearly. But actually, no, you know, again, another mad thing. I was, you know, originally these three guys were going to be actors, you know, and then I think that was in one of the early drafts, and then... just as I was putting the first draft in, I thought, that's too self-referential. I don't want to be actors. What are they going to be? Oh, they're going to be in a band, which meant I had to write songs. So, or someone had to write songs. And the thing is, I was putting in the first draft. It was going to be me. Do you know what I mean? So I wrote these songs. A friend of mine helped. And then latterly, another friend who is a proper bona fide songwriter has come on board and created a fantastic song. I'm going to say he's created a real banger. But, you know, a bit of me, a bit of my friend Matt Sutton, and a bit of him, a lot of him, Gil Kang. And we, you know, we have this song, which is a bit of an earworm, I think.
Yeah, it is. I'm regularly struggling to sleep in the middle of the night. I literally woke up like two nights ago. And yeah. It was there. And then I was like, I can't get back to sleep. It's just going round and round my head.
But yeah, so there's music in the show, and there's comedy.
Lots of dancing.
A little bit of violence, you know. There's a little bit. There's a dark side to it as well.
I can see a bed. What's that for?
A hotel room.
Oh,
it's all set in a hotel room in Ibiza. So the bed is there. There's a wardrobe there, which will become important. There's a bathroom and a balcony. You know, so you get the fully immersed experience of Ibiza. You know, you're coming in rainy February. And you have your summer holiday early.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. Just to wrap up, James first. Have you got any like words of wisdom for any budding director actors that want to kind of, I don't know, move into this industry? What words of wisdom would you give?
Just keep going. Keep plugging away. Get together with your friends and make stuff happen. It's about making stuff happen. That's what it's about. Yeah.
And Neil?
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Just keep doing it. Keep going. And if it's what you love, keep doing it. Because how many people get to do what they love? You know, at the end of whatever, you know, we're all doing what we love, which is a great thing to be saying, you know, in 2024 or any time. So just keep doing it and don't give up. Keep doing it. Keep through the successes, the failures, whatever. The middle bit, you know, just keep going and it will reward you.
Why not grab a ticket to one of the shows mentioned in this podcast? Tune in next time and recommend us to your friends and family.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. Until the next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.